Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. The subject is hyperbaric oxygen therapy. It's a fascinating branch of integrative medicine. It really is becoming a modality unto its own because, yes, we have nutrition, we have hormones, we have supplements, we have many things that we can do with patients. But one of the things that can provide remarkable outcomes is the application of hyperbaric oxygen therapy. Now, I'll tell you, from my perspective, it's been very, very hard to find a place that I can reliably refer my patients to, because hyperbaric oxygen, particularly in where I am in Manhattan, places are few and far between. It's partially the expense of renting a facility that's fully equipped in high real estate, high dollars per square foot Manhattan, and it's partially building codes which prohibit or make it much more difficult to set up hyperbaric oxygen chambers within doctors' offices. Maybe in the suburbs, in the hinterlands, maybe it's a little easier. But this is a very, very sophisticated technique. It's not just these inflatable tents that deliver just moderate amounts of relatively low concentration oxygen under slightly above atmospheric pressure. This is the real deal. And so Hyperbaric Medical Solutions has provided us with a couple of experts, Drs. Henry Prince and Dr. Scott Schur, to talk about some of the fascinating applications of this. So who wants to talk about some of the innovative applications of hyperbaric oxygen?
I'll start, and I'm sure Dr. Schur will come on with his take on many of them.
Sounds good.
Okay. Some of the most fascinating treatments that we have seen or results we've seen from the using hyperbaric oxygen therapy have surrounded neurologic disease. We have had some amazing success treating patients with traumatic brain injury, concussion, post-concussion syndrome, and strokes. And this is something that has, as a sort of doctor that was brought up on traditional medicine, where we are sort of instructed that the brain cannot heal itself, this is really was an amazing eye-opening experience for me.
And, you know, this centers around, you know, we're taught that during a stroke, literally parts of the brain die. Like during a heart attack, you know, parts of the myocardium, the heart muscle, die, and they're irretrievable. But in a stroke, there is something called a penumbra. So can you explain that concept to us,
right?
What's actually happening there?
Absolutely. I often will use an illustration of a dartboard with my patients when I talk about what we call the ischemic penumbra. And if you think about the bullseye in the center of a dartboard, that's the area of maximum damage as a result of a stroke. But going out from that bullseye, we get areas of less damage, some oxygen, less damage, more oxygen, less damage, even more oxygen, and then we get to normal areas. Now, we know from research that brain cells require a certain amount of oxygen to survive, but they require more oxygen to work as normal brain cells. So there are areas of the brain we feel after stroke or even after traumatic brain injury where there are large areas of the brain that are receiving enough oxygen to survive, but not enough oxygen to work as normal brain cells. They're not getting enough energy. They're not getting enough oxygen for their production of ATP and all the necessary protein synthesis that is required of a nerve cell.
Sometimes I like to talk about, instead
oxygen.
Of a blackout, like a brownout, you know, people sometimes experience like the light bulbs don't go out, but they sort of flicker and appliances don't work efficiently. That's a little bit what's happening in those not irretrievably damaged parts of the brain that have the potential to be resuscitated with high pressure oxygen.
Absolutely. And
creating...
Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up, Hank, that what we're really creating is we're basically regrowing the vascular bed that was damaged by the stroke or the traumatic brain injury or the potentially the neurocognitive condition, potentially something like Parkinson's disease or Alzheimer's, where you actually have tissue death and inflammation as well. And we can see this on functional imaging of the brain, which is now being used more in other countries and around some places in the U.S., but not as clinically, things like a SPECT scan, S-P-E-C-T, or diffusion-weighted MRI scanning, where you can see the brain cells basically regenerating themselves. And the idea with hyperbaric therapy is it just comes back to the physiology. We are increasing the amount of oxygen in circulation, diffusing oxygen further, optimizing the cell's function, and then regrowing the vascular bed to maintain that effect over time and to optimize its function.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll actually give you an example from clinical practice, slightly different situation, but I referred a patient to Hyperbaric Medical Solutions who I think is still undertaking care with you. I think he's had dozens of treatments. He's a young man who became very ill. He's a diabetic who developed a very severe respiratory infection, which required him to be in the intensive care unit, and he survived that. He almost died. But as a result, he experienced some damage to his eye, and he was told that he had deprivation of oxygen to his eye, and it was unlikely that he was going to recover his vision. We discussed it, and I said, "Hey, it's worth a try because they're not offering you much hope." And he's undertaking treatment with you now, with I think some encouraging results. It's an example, I think, of where you can use this modality to facilitate recovery from an ischemic injury. And there are lots of situations where ischemia or lack of oxygen is the culprit.
Absolutely, I know that patient well, and he is having some significant benefit.
Indeed, it's exciting.
An additional indication would be reflex sympathetic dystrophy, or
wow, that is a tough condition. Can you explain what that is? Explain what that is, because that's a condition I have no idea what to do with those patients. What does that entail?
Sure. So complex regional pain syndrome, or reflex sympathetic dystrophy, is a dysregulation of the autonomic nervous system, the nervous system that regulates our fight and flight mechanisms, as well as our eating, digesting, relaxation. Now, these things are out of our control. But what happens to a particular body part, usually it's something that's been injured in an accident, those mechanisms of regulation get all out of whack, and the area just becomes very painful. There's constant inflammation. There's changes in temperature sensation and regulation. And these patients are severely debilitated. And I know in New York and in San Francisco, I've treated dozens of these patients with hyperbaric therapy, and the results are dramatic, Ron. I mean, I can think of one patient recently that I saw with, she had an arm that she couldn't even move. It was so painful. She was on a pain pump, like an IV pain pump. Mm-hmm. And hyperbaric therapy, 40 sessions later, she's off her drugs. I mean,
wow.
It's pretty amazing what you can find. And I know Hank has similar stories, because these are some of the, I think, the patients that require the most pain medications that I've ever seen. And the results with hyperbaric therapy can be pretty dramatic.
That's really exciting, because there's virtually nothing that can touch that condition. It's a very, very refractory medical problem, as you know. What about, there's this cohort of patients who really feel horrible, and we don't sometimes know what to do with them. We don't know if they need more antibiotics, or if they're suffering the sequel of Lyme disease that they once had, but they've clearly had severe brain damage. And this may occur with other types of infections. People have had encephalitis, or people have had Epstein-Barr virus. What about those types of patients? Are they candidates for this?
Yes, absolutely. We've had some great success treating patients with what we call chronic Lyme disease. These patients actually require the upper level of pressure that we treat. These patients we will treat at 2.4 atmospheres for 90 minutes. Studies have shown that we can actually sterilize the Lyme organism wherever it's hiding with high pressure oxygen. The important thing to understand when we're treating patients with oxygen is it goes everywhere throughout the body. And one of the concerns in chronic Lyme is that the organism can go into a sort of latent stage and can hide out in the tissue far away from circulation, far away from where antibiotics can perfuse. But high concentration oxygen can perfuse out to all parts of the body and can actually get to these organisms and can help the body fight this infection. So we've really had some very, very significant benefit treating patients who have failed many other types of Lyme treatments. But again, as Dr. Sherrett discussed, this always should be done in conjunction with an integrative physician so that antibiotics can be used, nutritional guidance can be used to give the patient the best outcome.
Right.
Detoxification as well, absolutely.
Detoxification as well, right, because, I mean, there's so many elements to recovering one's health, but this, I think, would be an important adjunct to the right kinds of therapies for tick-borne diseases. What about cancer? Now, we're going to say up front that delivering high-pressure oxygen to patients with cancer is not a panacea. It's not a cure for cancer. But what's the rationale for utilizing HBOT in cancer patients, and how can it be combined with nutritional therapies, for example?
We've had I think we're really at the cusp of some amazing, I'm going to say discoveries, but with the use of diet and in conjunction with hyperbaric oxygen therapy for the treatment of some cancers. We've known for a while that cancers do not like oxygen. Most cancers create their own hypoxic or low oxygen environment and do best in that situation. In addition, we know that the body's immune system works best in a high oxygen environment, and our immune system is one of our first lines of defense against cancer. In addition, we've had some experience and studies show that even using hyperbaric oxygen therapy in conjunction with some chemotherapies or in conjunction with radiation, you get better results of the radiation therapy giving the patient hyperbaric oxygen therapy right before.
Right.
Because, again, radiation therapy requires oxygen in order to kill cells. So these are some of the older modalities that or understandings that we had with hyperbaric oxygen therapy in cancer. But through the work of Dr. Seyfried and more recently Dr. D'Agostino, we're finding that that cancers are obligate, require glucose in order to survive, whereas normal cells are able to use ketones as well as glucose in order to have successful metabolism. And this can may be a key to using hyperbaric oxygen therapy along with nutritional changes in order to treat cancer.
Yeah, and actually we're going to be focusing on the ketogenic diet with an upcoming guest. We'll be talking to Dr. Dominic D'Agostino about that later this week. The ketogenic diet actually pairs nicely with hyperbaric oxygen because they both invoke a similar mechanism on the Krebs cycle, the citric acid cycle. The notion that dates back to Otto Warburg early in the 20th century, cancers are sort of an anaerobic type of cell growth, and under the influence of oxygen, it inhibits them. So, you know, this is a really promising arena for treating cancer.
Yeah, we're starving the cancer of glucose, and at the same time, adding in hyperbaric therapy, which can act as an oxidative stress on those same cancer cells that are being deprived of the glucose, which makes them work. So we think that that's how, at least one of the ways at least, that hyperbaric therapy and the ketogenic diet are working synergistically together. And Dominic, I'm sure we'll talk much more about this, and that's so great that you're going to have him on. He's a wonderful guy, and he's doing some amazing work in Florida. But that's what he's been working on in Florida, among other things, with the ketogenic diet. But we've been starting to dip our toes in that world and looking at the ketogenic diet and hyperbaric therapy for cancer. And initially we're having some significant success. And again, like you mentioned before, Ron, this is not taking the place of any other therapy. This is just an adjunctive way to optimize the body's function and to optimize response to therapy.
Mm-hmm. What about patients who have ischemic conditions? That's where circulation is impaired, as in heart disease, patients who have angina, or patients who have claudication, problems with circulation to their lower extremities. Is there potential for hyperbaric oxygen there?
typically hyperbaric oxygen therapy is used for patients who are not bypassable. So we found that hyperbaric oxygen therapy certainly can give you intermittent benefit, and with long-term use help to create new blood vessels. Most of the times we use hyperbaric oxygen therapy for the treatment of ischemic wounds that cannot be healed using conventional therapy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be...
I think, Ron, you make a good point about ischemia.
Yeah.
Dr. Prince does too. I think ischemia is really something that we treat often in many different capacities in a hyperbaric chamber, whether it's in the brain or it's a limb, or if it's chronic ischemia or chronic degeneration with inflammation causing ischemia. So I do agree with Hank that angiogenesis, or the regrowing of blood vessels, is really key. We don't have a whole lot of good evidence yet about angina specifically and heart disease, but we do have some experimental indications that might be the case. And I can say that I have treated actually just a patient recently that couldn't be bypassed, like Hank was mentioning, and cardiac function increased dramatically as far as his exercise tolerance went. So there are some limitations as to who we can put in the chamber, mm-hmm. just from a physiologic perspective, like Hank mentioned, but as long as they fit within our criteria, there's significant potential for success and improvement in their quality of life.
Are there any other conditions where you're seeing a real or potential benefit that we haven't touched upon?
I think that as you talked about in the ischemic changes, we've had some also very exciting benefit with sudden eye loss and sudden hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
Acute retinal artery occlusion as well as
right.
sudden hearing loss, both are very amenable to hyperbaric therapy. Again, because we're able to create a situation where we're able to give these cells back the oxygen they that is required for normal function.
Yeah, talk about this retinal artery occlusion. That's actually a vein problem. Or there's also a vein problem where there's sudden loss of vision. Is that part of the scope where hyperbaric oxygen can be beneficial?
Well, anytime there's decreased circulation, whether it's a venous or a arterial occlusion, you have a decreased circulation. As a result of that decreased circulation, you have decreased oxygen being brought to a very, very oxygen-dependent retina, and therefore you can get loss of function. By giving hyperbaric oxygen therapy, we can help reduce swelling, reduce inflammation. We can help to create an environment where new blood vessels can be created. So ultimately, we can help many of these disease situations.
And I would imagine the timing is of the essence, because you can't say, hey, you know, 6 months ago I lost my hearing. Can you bring it back? It's a little less likely that you'll get a beneficial response if the condition has been longstanding. So patients should, you know, make an effort to come in as soon as possible, or arrange to come in if they're hit with this kind of problem.
You're absolutely correct. But also, and one of our biggest struggles is not only educating the patients, but educating doctors, and educating the doctors even for these indicated conditions to refer these patients quickly and efficiently where they can be taken care of and have the best chance of cure.
Well, that's part of our mission here on Intelligent Medicine. We have a lot of, in addition to enlightened lay people, we have a lot of integrated practitioners who rely on us to bring them the latest information. So hopefully they'll get turned on to some of these applications to help their patients. Anything else you want to add in terms of the repertoire for hyperbaric oxygen?
Sure. I think, this is Scott again. I think one of the things we didn't talk about very much and that we do have some success with is inflammatory bowel disease.
Oh, okay.
So ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we think this is likely related to the inflammatory nature of these conditions. There is also the possibility, although there is lots of controversy with regard to infections as the etiology of either of these or as the reason behind, but hyperbaric therapy is also used for bacterial overgrowth in the gut, probably because most of that bacteria that's overgrowing potentially does have what's called an anaerobic propensity or anaerobic preference, meaning it lives in low oxygen environments.
Right.
So you give it hyperbaric therapy, those bacteria are not very happy. So I would think it's probably a combination of decreasing inflammation, probably treating some bacterial overgrowth, and potentially treating infection if that's part of it. And as you probably know, Ron, a lot of these patients are young. They're in their 20s and 30s and could be on significant medication regimens that can prevent them from having children or really having even going to work. I mean, I've had some friends myself, and it's very hard to see. So what I've found with hyperbaric therapy is that it can, what we found, I think, in general, is that it can definitely be an adjunctive treatment. Some patients can potentially come off their medications or come down on their regimens pretty dramatically. So I think that's one other area that we see some significant success outside of the neurocognitive realm.
Good stuff. All right, so for more information, what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? You gave out a little bit of information in part one. Can you repeat the information?
Certainly. We are available. Our website is hyperbaricmedicalsolutions.com. Our contact telephone number is 516-802-5025. And you can also catch us on Facebook and Twitter.
Okay. And
I would say,
go ahead.
The call to action, Ron? Is that
yep.
what you'd like, right?
Yes.
I think our call to action really is to think outside the box like your members and listeners are already doing, and think about oxygen as an integrative way to help heal the body in all ways. And we're happy to have the discussion with your practitioners. If you're a patient, we're happy to have that discussion with physicians and educate them on how we can really facilitate the body's own natural way of healing and sometimes make it more efficient than it can on its own. And that's what we're here for, and we're here to educate, and we really thank you so much for your time and your expertise and your referrals personally.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you for being both bold pioneers but also very careful and scrupulous physicians in maintaining very high standards of safety and care for patients undergoing this this integrative therapy. This is not a weird or fly-by-night type of enterprise. This is the application of the highest standards of modern science to conditions that sometimes don't yield easy answers. So thanks to you both for being pioneers and for providing that service. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.